This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Many family members worry about planning for the future with an aging parent and how to help loved ones downsize and manage the many belongings acquired over a lifetime. The conversations can be difficult and too often are put off for too long. So we're going to discuss right now how to start the conversation and get tips for the process of downsizing, whether you're helping a friend or family member or trying to sort through your own belongings. Joining me now are Lindner Center of Hope outpatient therapist Kelly Heitkamp. Welcome, Kelly.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And Caring Transitions President and CEO Gina Siegel. Thanks for being here, Gina.
Thank you for having me.
Kelly, it seems like it's better to start a conversation like this before it's a crisis. So assuming that's the situation folks are in, there's some time. What are some practical tips for just starting to talk about this?
So it's important, you know, when you're talking to your parents that you're joining them in this, this conversation about what the future looks like and what downsizing may look like. Just asking them questions about if they have thought about downsizing themselves, what that might be like. So just be inquisitive.
Being kind of asking them rather than telling them.
Yes,
this
definitely.
This is what we need to do. Yeah, yeah. Gina, what are some of the difficult situations that people end up needing to diffuse during some of those conversations? And how can people avoid those conversations turning into arguments or becoming explosive?
Yes, it's and they can become pretty heated because it's emotional. So whether you're a family member, whether you're a friend, really I think the most important thing is to go in with, get your heart right. Don't go in with all of these questions. Why did you collect this? Why did you keep that? Why? You're not going to get a good answer, number one. And it's not productive. You're going to shut them down right away. And really, the point is to allow them to feel heard. So you want to ask them things like, what are your greatest fears? What are your greatest concerns? You might find out that actually you're thinking it's leaving the home that they've been in for decades, when actually maybe it's that they're afraid that they may not make new friends where they're going.
Being empathetic, exactly. I didn't mean to interrupt you,
yeah.
But just really trying to see the situation the way they're experiencing it.
Absolutely. And also, what are your greatest hopes? You know, get them to start changing the tape in their head and start thinking of the positives. What goals are important to you? What are the negotiables? What are the non-negotiables?
Yeah.
Not taking things personal.
Yes. And just listen. Pause and listen.
Yeah. Those are important tips for every part of your life, I think, right there. We're talking about the process of downsizing for yourself or with a loved one and how to make it more productive and less stressful. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. So, Kelly, it sounds like it's very important to make sure your loved one feels respected and is part of the process. Am I getting that correct?
Yeah, exactly. Instead of pointing out any failures or shortcomings that they're experiencing, maybe join them in that conversation and make them feel supported.
Yeah. And are there ways that you can really ensure the process happens that way? So it's a partnership, Gina. So it's not like, I'm in here, we're going to get this room sorted and 3 hours or whatever. How do you make it a partnership?
I've always said the difference between chaos and confidence is a plan. And so if you go in and you go through the checklist of questions, you go in with a right heart, it's really about planning. And so choose one area, choose a closet, choose a room, and just start from one corner and go across. Start with the things that are visible first. Because the drawers and cabinets are going to open up a whole new world. So you want to start with the things you can see first, which are low-hanging fruit, and make hard decisions about it. Don't leave the room until your time limit is up. So if you want to give yourself 15 minutes, stick to that 15 minutes. If you want to give yourself an hour, stick to that hour. Don't go beyond that or you'll start to get frustrated. And then just, is it... Is it donate? Is it discard? Could it have value? Might family want it? So don't call anyone yet. Just keep supplies at hand and start writing down who you want to call, what you want to do next once your time limit is done. So just make it a process.
Yeah. Kelly, I feel like some people might feel almost kind of ghoulish starting these discussions while an aging family member is still alive, that maybe, ooh, is it tough to have those conversations? But can that be helpful instead of waiting? I feel like there are some people who want to know what's going to happen to all of their belongings and what the plans are.
So you're just asking if having those conversations early can be more helpful.
Correct.
Definitely. I think by having the conversations earlier that, you know, you're not in a rush to get things done. You can take the process step by step. Your parent will have more choices, more options, and more say in everything that happens along the way. And you can also address any concerns they may have by just, you know, having those conversations.
Yeah. Kelly and I were talking earlier about how every decision that I made with my own parents was in crisis mode. And you aren't able to make good decisions in crisis
exactly.
mode. So you want to make sure that you have a plan in place so that if the unexpected happened, and we work with clients who have a plan to move in a year, then we'll get a call the following month because something happened to one spouse and it's go time. So because they had a plan in place, we just adjust the timing and we move forward. But having a plan, even the best laid plans can change, right?
Sure. And I know I'm thinking of my own grandmother, my father's mother, and she had a lot of cherished things that she had made, and she really wanted to know which grandchild was going to take ownership of this after she died. And, you know, she would have a little grease pencil. She'd mark the bottom of things on her china cabinet, and that seemed to give her comfort. I imagine there are a lot of people like that who, this is very important to me. I want to know that it's going to be with someone I love. Do you hear that, Kelly, when you're talking to people?
I definitely do. And I, you know, that attachment that people have to their things and to their home, there are ways to, you know, continue to have those memories, continue to have those items in a way by doing things like giving them to family members or taking pictures of things and writing a little blurb about it or sharing those memories with your family member. So it's definitely, it allows your family to hold on to those things as much as possible.
Kelly, you just mentioned pictures, and it makes me wonder what kind of role technology can play in all this. I talked to a gentleman years ago who was downsizing just from a bigger house to a smaller place, and he said, you know, we're taking pictures of lots of stuff. We're sending those pictures to a digital frame. We're getting rid of the stuff, but we can still have those memories. Is that, Jean, you're shaking your head. Yes, is that something you...
Almost daily.
Really?
So we... the nature of our business is we are inside other people's homes constantly in their attics and basements, and there's always that section with tubs and cardboard boxes of slides, reel-to-reels, and physical photos that the family hasn't touched for decades. So technology is our friend. It's not always our friends if you have kids with devices, but now when you're dealing with tubs and tubs of photos, it is truly our friend. And there are companies now locally and nationally who can take all of those photos and they will do as little or as much as you need them to do. So you can drop off cases of them and they will digitize everything. And then from there, do you want them to put them in chronological order? Do you want them to put them in a book? So this is how we counsel our families who want to move the boxes yet again. We will encourage them to get them digitized and then put them into have them put into a book and make 10 copies and send them to family. Now your family's actually looking at the photos and enjoying them. You can annotate them or not. So it's just, it's a great way because that's an emotional trigger, the photos. That's a memory captured. So that's how we have used our resources for good like that.
Yeah. Is that expensive to do that, to have a company digitize tubs and tubs of photos?
You know, it's all relative. So it depends on how much you have and how much you want them to do. So if you want them to design the book and it could get a little pricey.
Sure.
Or not.
Mm-hmm.
So
Sometimes libraries, I know my library, they have, you can do it there for free. Oh. You have to do it yourself, mm-hmm. but so there's some resources out there like that as well.
Yeah. Kelly, what about navigating this among siblings? You know, there are some people who are only children and they're overwhelmed because they have to do all this themselves. There are some people who have a few siblings. There are some people with big families, and different siblings might have very different ideas about how this should work. What's your advice for that?
Well, I think starting off by having those tough conversations, you know, together, whether that's Zoom. I know sometimes people live all over, but just having those conversations and hearing everyone's ideas. And sometimes if you can't come to agreements or you can't get the support of your siblings or other family members, you know, that's where you may want to call someone in, a resource to come in and kind of be the, you know, mediator to help with those things. But 'cause that does happen. People, you know, relationships can be complicated. So knowing when to be able to do that, call in someone.
Yeah, do you run into that a lot, Gina, where you're kind of called in to almost become a referee or a mediator of sorts?
We do, and we respectfully engage as far as we need to. I'm an only child, so I went through this with my parents, and it was soul-crushing at times because I was the only one accountable. My husband was rock solid for me, but I was the one who had to make ultimately those decisions. So I thought it was really hard, yet you have large families who feel the same way because there are so many involved. With that said, we've seen both dynamics. We've seen large families who actually came together beautifully, and they honored their parents well, they got along well, they collaborated well, and then you have everything in between. So we can come in and we'll do Zoom calls in the house with family members coast to coast and let them be part of the conversation. And again, your topic is conversation, and it really is about the dialogue. So just really making sure that you all have the same end game in mind is the best scenario. Doesn't always happen, but yeah, we can be bagged cop every now and then.
I think it's really important too to have one person kind of driving the boat or driving the car.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, listening and working together, but having that one person, whether that's a power of attorney or someone the parents have designated.
Sure.
Absolutely agree.
Yeah. That's got to be tricky. Can that be complicated, Kelly, to decide who that one person is, especially if you've got a sizable family?
Yes. Ultimately, it should be the parents' choice. I mean, that conversation happened way before this is all on the table. So I think, you know, if that is not in place, then definitely working that out and having that in place.
Yeah. Again, we're talking about the process of downsizing for yourself or with a loved one and how to make it more productive and less stressful. We're going to continue our conversation after a short break. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're talking about the process of downsizing for yourself or with a loved one and getting tips for how to make it more productive and less stressful. My guests are Lindner Center of Hope outpatient therapist Kelly Heitkamp and Caring Transitions Cincinnati East President and CEO Gina Siegel. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wvxu.org. Gina, you know, we've been talking about these situations where you have some time, where you're able to do some planning, have these important conversations. But there are, of course, unfortunately, situations where there isn't a lot of time for downsizing. You're kind of in crisis mode. What's your advice for those times when the process just has to move quickly? Are there different approaches? How do you do that?
We are quite well versed in kicking into action quickly because it happens. And so we love it when families will include us because we can help them strategize and put a plan together so we can take care of the logistics and allow them to focus on the people. And that's one thing that I really missed when I was going through it with my parents is there was so much stuff and business to aging and moving. We wound up moving my parents 6 times in 3 years. It was devastating.
Gosh, that does sound...
And that's never good for anyone.
Right.
But just to to allow us to take that on so that you can totally stay engaged in their well-being and shepherd them through the process. So that's, get help, whether it's us or friends or your community, just ask for help.
Yeah. Kelly, what's your first piece of advice for somebody who finds themselves in that situation? Maybe they thought they had some time. They maybe haven't even started to talk about this because they thought they had a lot more time than they do. And all of a sudden, it's crisis time.
Well, I think ultimately you do the best you can. But I think bringing someone in, you know, like Gina and like maybe a real estate agent who specializes and selling homes and knows, you know, that process and those needs. Mm-hmm. But I agree with her, just getting help, just, you know, seeking support and taking care of yourself and, you know, your mental health as well. It's very emotionally taxing.
Yeah. There are situations where part of this crisis is that living conditions have become dangerous for a loved one. There's a health or safety risk in the home. There's maybe a critical repair that needs to be done that hasn't been done, or there's, you know, clutter that's gotten out of control. Kelly, how do you determine when that line has been crossed, when it's become dangerous for a loved one to be where they are?
So it's good to have someone with an eye on them. If you don't live close, maybe that's a geriatric care manager or, you know, a neighbor, a friend, someone who can notice those changes. But just looking for signs of abuse, signs of, you know, whether that's physical or financial or behavioral changes. Sometimes those things can indicate a problem or something more serious. So I think just being able to just have eyes on the situation, whether it be physically or with a neighbor or someone, and knowing when it's unsafe.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine there are people in that situation who become afraid. They don't necessarily want to leave their home. They're worried adult services could be called and maybe kind of try to hide the problem out of that fear. Gina, what's the best approach in that kind of situation?
It's tricky. Some of the indicators are if they don't have people over anymore, their house is most likely filling up, or there's evidence of some neglect. If they can't navigate through their house any longer, you know, there are things like that. If you're not close, and nowadays, I think the statistics are 40% or more of adult children live away outside of the state from where their parents are. So this is where it does take a village. And so whether it's a neighbor, and I can't tell you how many neighbors we work with that are truly engaged beyond, you know, there are some people who have no advocates. They have no children, no heirs. So the neighbors that we work with just are, it's beautiful to see that they've just adopted them, and they will be the ones that call in a realtor. The realtor might call us in because they have to move. Yeah. So
becomes that almost family of choice, that family you build for yourself.
It does.
Yeah. Kelly, what are the legal implications of a situation like that when somebody's living in a place that's become dangerous?
So can you tell me a little bit more about that question, like what you're looking for?
Sure. I guess I'm just wondering, is there a time where it crosses a line where, you know, if you're an adult child who's been away, you're a neighbor who hasn't been in for a while, that you should call adult services, that you should get some kind of authority in there to try to work through a situation if it's become very dangerous?
Well, I think if you're questioning that, you should call. I think calling Adult Protective Services and having them come in, because they are the experts in, you know, that situation. But if there are, you know, if they're falling a lot, say, the house isn't safe, there's not clear pathways, those kinds of things. So falls, behavioral changes, you know, weight loss. Sometimes when someone's losing weight, they're not eating, or they're just neglecting themselves. So I think all those can be indicators.
Sure. We have a caller on the line. Hi, Karen. Thanks so much for your call. Do you have a question or comment for us?
Yes. I'm in home health, and I see this situation all day long. And I wanted to just give a couple of tips as far as, like, if you live out of town and calling your parents as far as making sure they're okay. And one of them is to vary the time of the call. People that are older get very good about specific scheduling and can kind of put themselves together for their schedule. And if you vary the call, they kind of catch them off guard. I know that sounds sneaky, but, you know, that can help. As well as vary the questions and every once in a while throw in kind of a out of the, you know, normal, hi, Mom, how are you? I'm fine, good, da-da-da, questions to try to gauge their mental status a little bit better.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Karen. I think those tips ring true to you, Kelly?
They do. I think you have to get creative sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's great advice. And I also think placement services is another resource that I wish I would have had. And I'm pretty certain I wouldn't have moved my parents 6 times in 3 years had I used them. So there are so many. I'm so grateful that you've opened up this discussion because there are so many resources out there that weren't there before that many of us who've already gone through it didn't know existed. And it's important to let others know that they do.
Yeah.
It makes a big difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that call, Karen. We appreciate that. Gina, how should family members, we talked about this a little bit, but how do family members go about determining, hey, we can handle this ourselves, or ooh, we really need help with this from a professional, or whether it's from friends or neighbors or communities? What are kind of your tips for people to figure that out?
You know, usually all of our jobs begin with a free consultation at the beginning because it's really the only way that we can get to know the situation. And usually from that first conversation, we can tell how emotionally charged the situation is, how uncertain it may be. And so when we are in that situation, we will we're very gentle and very intentional about making sure that the family does what they need to do first. So the person who's moving or downsizing, their wishes should be honored to the best of everyone's ability. Then the next step is allowing family, whoever's appropriate, friends, family, to go through and select the items that are meaningful to them. We come in and we tell them, we want to come in when you're done with that, when you're ready for the next step. And then we will thoughtfully make sure we capture value if we can. And then beyond that, we'll donate as much as we can and then discard what we need to. So it's really family. Sometimes it's part of the grieving process. I know when I went through it, it was important for me to touch everything. I didn't want anyone else to touch anything first. Mm-hmm. And then I reached saturation, and then I was cooked, and yeah. I was done, and I called everyone I could to just come in and help me empty the place.
You know at that point.
Yeah. You know when it's time, yeah.
Kelly, it seems like the best possible outcome would be for downsizing to be a joyful process where you can kind of celebrate the memories that go into these possessions. How tough is it to pull that off, and what are some tips you can offer to make that happen?
Well, again, going back to the point of, you know, having the conversations early and taking things slow, letting the parent be in charge as much as possible and making choices, you know, creating memories out of some of their things and their attachments and their home. But then looking forward at where they're going, like things that they enjoy, like if there's a gardening club or and looking forward to being a part of a new community where they can feel supported and have great quality of life.
Yeah, sounds like great tips. I've been talking with Lindner Center of Hope outpatient therapist Kelly Heitkamp and Caring Transitions Cincinnati East president and CEO Gina Siegel. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you, Lucy.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. And Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.